This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Bored of too many ads and dull, meaningless chat?
We've got neither. Joy Drive, smart, fun radio.
Okay, do you have a to-do list? I have to confess I keep one, but I'll tell you something, it's handwritten. I've tried using the tasks on my phone, but there's, I don't know, something in the process of regularly writing down and crossing things off that somehow satisfy me. Maybe it's the fact that I can visually see items with lines through them, whereas on the phone, they just completely disappear. Well, how important are to-do lists and what is the psychology behind them that helps us manage our busy lives? Kim Caldwell knows about them. Kim is a senior lecturer of psychology at Charles Darwin University. Kim, great to have you back on Drive.
Thanks, Warren, and glad to hear we're kindred spirits. I too write my to-do list by hand. Yeah,
there is something about it, isn't it? So what is it the process of writing that helps us process it? What's the psychology behind the writing of it?
I think for me, it's about making something a bit tangible and actually giving yourself the time away from the screens to sit and think. My approach, and everyone's going to have a different one, is to have a monthly list of goals. And then I kind of check in with that each day and get from that, all right, what can I knock off towards these goals today? And that helps to inform my daily to-do list. And sometimes I don't get to all of the tasks, but that's the good thing about having those monthly goals, is they've got a bit of a longer lifespan, and there's always tomorrow when things get derailed.
Kim, question for you. Why is it that when we do have our to-do list and we tick something off, we tend to remember what we've ticked off? Like, oh, I've achieved that. That's great. I've done it. And then you can see, oh, my goodness, there's about 10 other things and I can't remember what they all were. I need to actually physically look at the list to remember them. Why is it that we remember the good stuff?
Yeah, I think there's one perspective on this, is that there's kind of three types of things that end up on people's to-do lists. Really easy stuff that's fun to do, or that's you know, trivial. Stuff that has no real clear deadline, so there's no real urgency to it. It's kind of less tangible. And these things, they kind of sit in the middle, that we know we need to complete and we got pretty concrete deadlines around. So I think that tells us something about how we compose these to-do lists, in that we're going to feel compelled to put things on there that are easy to knock off, to give ourselves a bit of a pat on the back. And that's really important. You know, it helps us feel like we're moving in the right direction. But there's going to be stuff we're going to find ways to put off. And so in one way, it's about the approach you have to setting those goals and the tasks that underlie them. In another way, it's often the ones we haven't accomplished yet that we can tend to find more memorable. They sort of stick in our mind. We might have been interrupted, or we just sort of know there's something in the back of our mind we haven't got around to quite yet, and they're kind of a bit more sticky sometimes in people's memories.
Let's talk about the goals in particular, Kim. What happens when we've got too many goals and we're juggling them? What's a good way, I suppose, of sorting them to make sure, you know, I suppose we are achieving them in the long run?
Yeah, great question. I think one thing is to, as I sort of said at the start, to take the time, really dedicate some time to this. I mean, we have so many demands on our time in these modern eras. You know, we've got things to watch on streaming platforms, and we've got jobs, and a lot of Australians are working multiple jobs or taking on extra shifts to deal with the cost of living. So I feel like we definitely feel subjectively like we have more demands on our time than maybe previous generations have. So I think that means we really need to sit down and take the time to work on this. And like any skill, you know, goal setting and coming up with to-do lists, these things, you know, they're not natural. Some people are naturally talented at them, but for a lot of us, it's going to take time to work on and work through, and a bit of trial and error, and see what works for us and get a really good system going. But when we do have these competing goals, it's often good to kind of start to break things down into sub-goals or component tasks, and then get a sense, again, a bit less of a smorgasbord and a bit more of a menu of things we can reasonably accomplish within the timeframes we're looking at.
We're chatting with Kim Caldwell, senior lecturer in psychology at Charles Darwin University, about to-do lists. Kim, question for you. Let's say, let's look at my to-do list. There's a few different things on there, but there's some things that are enjoyable and things that I absolutely hate. For example, I need to write a report for work and I'm so disinterested in doing that. But if I've got my other one of I need to go and ride a certain number of kilometres today, I'm excited about that one. What are some tips in making sure that we do the goals that we don't necessarily enjoy much rather than just keep ticking off the ones that we love to do?
Yeah, I'm reminded of my dad's advice to me growing up there, Warren, which was find a job you love and you'll never have to work a day in your life. I think there's some really interesting parts of psychology that look at why humans are motivated and how human motivation is different to types of motivation we see in other animals. And I think you just hit the nail on the head. There's things that feel part of us, that feel part of our identity, that are enjoyable or inherently exciting or fun, probably like your bike riding, although that might not be the case for everybody. Yeah. And then there's things which seem really mundane that are often tied to more extrinsic things like our jobs, or have endpoints that aren't really that meaningful to us or that interesting to us. So we're naturally kind of much more motivated to do the fun, exciting things that feel part of who we are, consistent with our identity. So again, it can be good to kind of step in and think through a bit of reframing or maybe changing your perspective on some things. You know, there's aspects of my job I don't find that intrinsically enjoyable, but I love my job. So I can at least value doing these activities because it serves this broader kind of purpose or role that I have that I do enjoy. And we would call that a type of identified regulation. And it's the difference is the task itself isn't inherently enjoyable, but it brings about a goal or something that we do find valuable or intrinsic.
So it's like think of the bigger picture when we've got those mundane tasks.
Yeah. And the other thing is our extrinsic motivators, they're kind of great determinants of our behavior as long as they're there, but sometimes they're not there. So we sometimes need to check in with ourselves and work on internalizing those reasons for pursuing some goals if we can, and we can't always do that. And when we can't do that, that's when we probably need to be, you know, setting more reminders and sharing some of these goals and things with other people, keeping ourselves a bit more accountable, using the apps, writing the lists, all this kind of stuff to keep us on track.
One thing I find is sometimes I set unrealistic deadlines for to-do items on my to-do list. Should we really incorporate, I suppose, some sort of, I mean, if I was project managing something, I'd have buffer in there for every single task. Yet for stuff that I have on my to-do list, no, it's efficient. It's got to be done by a certain time. Should we sort of put that buffer in our to-do list as well? Would that help?
Yeah, one great term for this is called a fudge ratio. So this requires a lot of goal monitoring. So we not only have to set these goals and deadlines for ourselves, but we have to track our progress. And if we're not doing that, we're never going to get a realistic sense of how much we are fudging things. And we're going to do that to ourselves, right, as well. And this is really taps into the planning fallacy side of things. We're terrible planners. We're not very good at figuring out how many steps are actually going to be involved in something we're taking on. We're not very good at anticipating every possible thing that could go wrong and could shift or stretch or derail those goals. And we tend to kind of think that these things will be things that we can achieve and attain quite easily. So the value in monitoring our goal progress means that when we get to the end of completing a goal, we can look back and go, I thought that report would take me 2 or 3 days to write. It actually took me 2 weeks. So next time I have a report like this to write, I'm going to have to make sure I set aside at least 2 weeks, maybe even more, and work my way back from there and engage in a bit of backwards kind of mapping to ensure we get there on time. And again, this is a process that requires a bit of practice and a bit of trial and error to figure out what our fudge ratio is, and so we can plan accordingly into the future.
Is there a link between achieving goals and your well-being? Is there any link there?
Yeah, and again, this tilts more towards those more intrinsic goals that involve things like challenge or mastery. tend to make us feel a bit better when we accomplish them than the mundane or everyday sorts of tasks. And we know a lot about this from goal orientation theory. So a really good example of this is when I was an undergraduate, I had a close friend. We studied a lot together. We studied for about the same amount of time, you know, late nights, wake up sort of mid-morning, back to uni, back on the computers, back in the books. And we'd get really comparable scores. But semester on semester, I would say, oh, yeah, this, remember we studied this last semester? And he would say, I don't remember that at all. So in that scenario, my goals are a bit more what we would call mastery oriented. I was really just motivated to learn everything I could about subjects, and I found that interesting. I found that enjoyable. His motivations are a bit more performance oriented, which were kind of, you know, I want to get a good mark on this exam, or I want to pass the unit. And we know from a fair bit of research on goal orientation theory that it's those mastery goals that tend to lead to deeper encoding and better memory processes and these kinds of things. We also know that mastery goals make us feel a bit better when we achieve them. We get a greater kind of sense of, you know, that investment paying off than, again, an extrinsic thing like an exam or a test or report that once it's done, it's sort of in the periphery and we don't really think about it much anymore.
So therefore, don't make sure that your to-do list also contains some things that I suppose benefit you overall rather than just being work orientated or something like that.
Yeah, exactly. And this is where a lot of this early research from the Zagarnik effect came from. It was like initial thinking was, well, what is it about these interrupted goals? Is it that they're somehow stored differently in memory or something like that? And then the conversation became very much about, we don't like being interrupted when we're halfway through something and we don't get that sense of closure and accomplishment and achievement. So then the literature really turned towards investigating those kinds of reasons for engaging in tasks and setting goals and all of that sort of thing.
Kim, we've run out of time, but great conversation. Thanks for joining us on Drive Again today.
Thanks, Warren. Always great to chat.
Kim Caldwell, Senior Lecturer in Psychology at Charles Darwin University.
Joy Drive on Joy 94.9 FM in Melbourne, Joy on your digital radio, iHeartRadio, TuneIn.com or the Joy app, no matter where you are.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.